Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive shirt out front, should tell you so. And the website is alive this week with all things America and some local thoughts on all the insurrection, the impeachment, and the maniac running our country. But in the meantime, we're playing football this week. We're going to Buffalo. Luke, it's been a little while since I've been to Buffalo. last time I was there, I think you and I were there. I missed the Buffalo game last year, running around Asia, probably being one of the early adopters to the coronavirus on the way back here, right around playoff time this time last year. This is a different kind of team, and I think that, you know, getting fired up for a game against the Bills, certainly the Chiefs, if they get that far next week, or the Browns, there would be something. But there's something about this Tennessee-Baltimore thing, right, that you and I've talked about, Eddie George and Steve McNair and Ray Lewis, and we went through that all last week with all the Tennessee media we had here at Baltimore Positive. The bad blood is very, very real to Lamar Jackson, obviously, after the game. And real to John Harbaugh, even though they didn't talk about it much last week. And I talked about it a little bit last week in relation to, like, I talked to Blaine Bishop about that. I talked to Matt Stover about that. I talked to Jared Johnson about that. They all indicated that that would be the result. What we saw happen after the Marcus Peters interception would be how the Ravens would treat that, because as much as it was John Harbaugh against the entire team and Malcolm Butler 8 weeks ago, the Ravens made their statement in the post game, literally, by the Titans Ravens is a thing. And I'm sure they're circling that on the calendar again next year, right?
Well, and the bummer is they're not scheduled to play each other next year. So that's the problem when you're talking about a rivalry that's not the AFC Central as it was 20
maybe
years
that'll
ago.
Be the 17th game. No.
But yeah, I'm glad you brought up Blaine Bishop, because I had a chance to listen to that. I was driving home from the facility. I think it was Thursday, maybe it was, during the practice week. And Blaine Bishop,
he likes me. He really, really likes me.
Yeah, hey. But he's a guy that you think of from those early days. I mean, he was an Oiler, and then became a Titan. So
he's a real Oiler.
But he made the point that, and this was something that someone brought to my attention, because we don't really think about it. We didn't really talk about it a whole lot because the game was such a dud for the Ravens. But the Titans did that before the playoff game also. And that's something they do. That's something that they've done in road games. They have gone to the midfield logo for the opposition. And, you know, I don't even know if I'd characterize it as a hooping and hollering kind
Take
of thing
proverbial
as much
dump.
As much. Well, I don't even know if it's that as much as they're huddling at midfield and they're saying, this is our field today. This is our game. And Blaine Bishop made the very cogent point to say no one had done anything about it with them. Other teams had just allowed them to do it. And for a Ravens team that, let's face it, Nestor, we've talked about this. We haven't emphasized this point nearly as much as others. And I certainly have thought the whole post Super Bowl 47 narrative of Harbaugh, you know, wanting more mild mannered guys and not wanting as many alpha males. I think I've always thought that was overrated. Do I think there was nothing to that whatsoever? Maybe not, but I think it was way
John
overblown.
John doesn't want a-holes in his building.
I think it was way overblown. But that said, he brought in a Steve Smith. He brought in some other guys that, you know, Marcus Peters is a great example of that. But what's something that we have talked about? Not even talking about
Earl Thomas, by the way. Throw him in there too.
But not even talking about the context of the post Super Bowl 47 purge, as some people want to call it. We have talked about this team maybe benefiting from playing with a little bit more of an edge after that Week 11 loss, where they blew the double digit lead in the second half, and they couldn't tackle not only Derrick Henry, but they couldn't tackle AJ Brown in the fourth quarter. We questioned this team's toughness a little bit, didn't we? I mean, we talked about that. I mean, I'm not trying to attack their character, but in terms of, you know, needing to have a little bit more of an edge, that championship bravado a little bit more. So fast forward to Sunday, what do we see? Calais Campbell jawing with some members of the Titans in the pregame. Certainly, post Marcus Peters,
but he doesn't like them to begin with, right? I mean, Calais Campbell has a thing with them.
Oh, he had a little bit of a history. Yeah, I mean, it's not as though he played 3 years in Jacksonville. It's, you know, he was Arizona Cardinal much longer than he was a Jaguar, but certainly had a little bit of history. He was well documented. He was not there for the Week 11 matchup, as Brandon Williams also absent, but you see him jawing. Obviously, over the course of the game, you know, not that you necessarily had.
I didn't think the game was all that chippy in that way.
Yeah, there wasn't a whole lot of that, but there certainly was when Marcus Peters intercepts the pass and you see what felt like 2/3 of the Ravens team go to the Titans midfield logo. They draw a penalty, which, you know, could that have
hurt
them? I
thought Marlon Humphrey was like going to take a dump. You know what I mean? When he slid, I went back and watched it a few times and I thought, you know, they were more pissed off than anybody let on, clearly. And clearly Lamar, who calls me Mr. Luke, you know what I mean? And I've got to put an end to that. I'm going to put an end to that on Wednesday in the weekly press conference. But, you know, Lamar is about the most respectful, you know, young human being I've met in sports in regard to how he speaks to the media and how he speaks when we're not around. There's a lot of guys on this team that I you know, I've heard the way they speak when I'm in there, and I don't appreciate it. I don't like it. It is not my style. Lamar would be the last guy to say, I'm not going to shake your hand. I'm just going to run off the field. And Lamar did that. And I thought, wow, that's interesting because, you know, I see Lamar as bigger than that and above all that, but Lamar took it personally. And even after winning, he didn't even want to go gloat. Literally, right? He didn't even want to go do all. Lamar doesn't have a whole lot of that in him, you know, beating on his chest. He doesn't really. If he did, he would have been more like Marcus Peters or Jalen Ramsey, who's out there wanting to fight everybody every week, right? Lamar just said, "Nope, I want seeing Buffalo, Kansas City," and ran off. I that's fascinating. I mean, I think the more we get into this, for me as the psychologist, I'm always interested in what Lamar's thinking now as much as what he's doing. I know what he can do is supernatural. I'm always wondering what he's thinking when he's pounding the ground and losing. And after the game now, I think asking him questions about him running off. He was clearly very agitated. He was agitated he had to come back on. He was kind of agitated he had to do the ESPN thing. And I've never seen him agitated. John Harbaugh's agitated with the media 90% of the time, right, in season. I've never seen Lamar agitated, especially after winning. You know what I mean? Like, it wasn't, like, celebratory, which is good because, like, it feels like he's got more work to do on Saturday. Like, but the focus on Lamar around that and then the whole team, because Lamar wasn't out there dancing on the logo, right? The only way we would know how Lamar felt was him jettisoning off the field, which is interesting.
Well, I mean, I think it reflects this team having an edge, which, as I just said a few moments ago, that's something that we had kind of talked about, this team needing to have a little bit more of an edge. I mean, that was one thing that was so interesting about adding Marcus Peters last year, for example, and knowing what he brings. And I mean, as much as we've reminisced about this Ravens-Titans rivalry going back 20 years ago, I mean, there was nastiness. I mean, the Ravens absolutely wore the black hat for that rivalry. There was no question about that. Not saying that Tennessee was 100% pure and innocent, but it was the Ravens that instigated much of that.
Well, Ray Lewis had been in orange jumpsuit and handcuffs 9 months previous, right?
Sure. So, right. And, you know, I mean, not to dive too much into that aspect of it, but I think what you saw on Sunday was the Ravens embracing the idea of, not necessarily that they were wearing the black hat, because, I mean, you know, if we want to get into this, I mean, Tennessee instigated more of it with the midfield logo the last couple games. But
well, the Ravens would wear their black jerseys at home if they face Cleveland 2 weeks from now, right?
I mean, I don't know about that, but my point is they embraced having more of an edge. I mean, I don't know if Lamar Jackson, I'd say, agitated post game as much as just showing an edge, showing some of that intensity, showing the fact that, hey, in my mind, Malcolm Butler and the Titans disrespected my head coach before the last game. And we were in the tunnel and we didn't, you know, we talked about this. They were in the tunnel and getting ready to come out. And a lot of those players probably didn't even know what happened until, I don't know, after the game or halftime or halfway.
Well, had there been 70,000 of us there, my wife would have been jumping over the upper deck if they were out there dancing on our logo as, you know, Ray Lewis is coming out of the tunnel. That just never would have happened, right? Like, literally.
Well, fans aren't going to run onto the field, but certainly you get the reaction.
There's no way that happens in a not empty Baltimore football stadium.
Oh, it could happen. Oh, it absolutely. It happened in January last year. The Titans did the same thing before the game last year. I mean, as Wayne Bishop said, that's something they've done in road stadiums. The difference is the Ravens did something about it, not before the game on Sunday, but they beat them, and then they gloated about it. And look, I don't have a problem with it. Am I going to pump it up and show it to kids as an example of the best sportsmanship in the world? No, but this is the NFL. It's not peewee football.
It's not about sportsmanship, the NFL.
Right. It's about winning football games. It's about winning championships. These guys, their livelihood's on the line here. So I like seeing them have an edge. I think that helped them, and I think that's something that could help them. I did find it interesting that Ed Reed went to Twitter and kind of criticized it a little bit. Now, I don't necessarily agree with Ed, and I would also kind of say to Ed, who at this point, what, Ed is 42, I think, at this point, far removed from
playing. But Ed Reed never showed the guy the football on the way in the end zone, did he? I don't think
Ed Reed
did
played
that.
For Miami, though. I think we need to be careful to remember this is an early 40s stage of his life, Ed Reed, compared to 25-year-old Ed Reed. Or a 20-year-old Ed Reed talking you-know-what at the University of Miami. However, I will say this. As much as I don't necessarily take the same stance as Ed Reed, I do have to laugh seeing some Ravens fans and throw shade on Ed Reed. It's like, I'll remind you that Ed Reed had a 5-year period at the end of his career where what the Ravens did on Sunday that we're viewing as this great accomplishment, they did it every year for 5 years in a row at a minimum. So maybe the message you should be taking there, if you're the Ravens, seeing Ed Reed mention about winning with more class and not stooping to their level, maybe the more teachable moment to take away is it's a wild card playoff victory. Look, it's fun. Be happy about it. Be excited about it. You're moving on. It's over now. And I thought that's what was...
Well, they would not have done that. They won't do that in Buffalo, right? I mean, they don't...
No, you wouldn't think... No, and again, I have no problem with it.
Sliding on the other team's logo in the last 4 minutes of the game is not something they're going to make a habit of doing.
That was a deliberate response to what Tennessee had done the last two times they had come to Baltimore. And again, I'm not going to hold it up as some shining example to single out to kids, but at the same time, I'm not going to, some of the outrage I saw from some national media and stuff. I mean, just silly. First of all, it's a damn midfield logo.
I haven't had any fun in 12 months. Let me have a good time,
Sure, sure. I mean, right. And as I said, we have heard so much, and I've said this at times myself, this team needing to have more of an edge, this team being, a little, at times, a little too satisfied with just playing hard or finishing with a winning record or getting into the playoffs. So, if they took on a little more of a confrontational mindset on Sunday, then good for them, because it clearly they won the football game, so it clearly didn't hurt them at the very least. So I just thought it was interesting to see that response from Ed Reed, and I do wonder if you had a chance to sit down and have a cigar with Ed, because that's what he, if you follow him on Instagram, he loves his cigars, to say, Ed, if that had been you part of that team at age 25 and the Titans did that to you, would you be saying the same thing you're saying now? And I'm thinking Ed might be saying, you might be right. Yeah. But as I mentioned, to me, the big picture lesson to take away from Papa Ed is you won a playoff game. That's great. But are you satisfied with that? Or are you on to the next challenge now and to keep this thing going? Because as we said, the ultimate goal, as much as last week we were talking about, what would constitute a success for this team, considering everything they've gone through. And we kind of said winning the playoff game at the very least. But, at the same time, if you go to Buffalo and you lose by 4 touchdowns, are you going to be feeling all that great about this Ravens season going into the offseason? No. So why not try to keep it going? And that's what Pernell McPhee said after the game and kind of looking at the Ravens, post-game quotes. He didn't speak to the media directly, but they compiled some more quotes. And, he's one of the few guys on this team that's won a Super Bowl. You have him. You have the Wolfpack. You have Jimmy Smith. You have Anthony Levine. You have Derek Wolf, who won one in Denver. You don't have many guys who have done much more in terms of playoff January success than what happened yesterday or Sunday. So
Calais has won a couple games in Arizona, I think, right? Yeah.
He got to a Super Bowl his rookie year. But again, not a whole lot there. I mean, this isn't 5 years ago where you had 25 guys who'd won a Super Bowl. So I do think, what Ed Reed had to say, I certainly wasn't going to tweet something along those lines and didn't feel that way about what the Ravens did. But maybe the takeaway is, hey, there's more winning to do here. The job isn't done here. As Pernell McPhee said, I don't want to go home yet. So he was saying he was going to get home Sunday night, and he was already going to start looking at film of Kansas City and Buffalo, not knowing at that point who the Ravens were going to be playing. So, you know, so I think it was interesting to kind of see, you know, Calais Campbell in the pregame, obviously dancing on the midfield logo, Lamar Jackson running to the locker room and not shaking hands, and, you know, talking about the Titans being disrespectful to them in the previous meeting and the interactions with Mike Vrabel and Titans players with John Harbaugh. And then as I thought about it, as I was kind of going through, you know, the talking points as far as this whole part of the conversation, you had Marlon Humphrey wearing a black cowboy hat in the post-game press.
And apparently a belt buckle as well.
Yeah, so I don't know, wearing the black hat there, was there anything to that? Or was, you know, this is a pretty nice cowboy hat. Not my style per se, but he wore it well. But, you know, were the Ravens embracing not being the black hat on Sunday, but, you know, embracing a little bit more of that in terms of going on the road, going into hostile territory where there actually was a crowd, and the crowd had at least some impact on the game.
By the way, I love the slogan they have now, T-I-T-A-N-U-P. I looked at it, I said, tighten up, tighten up. Oh, tighten up on third down. Mm-hmm. Oh, tighten up. You know,
so
it took me a minute, and I'm like, why had I never thought of that before? You know, that's kind of clever.
Yeah, I mean, all these teams.
Like being a Raven maniac, but I thought that went up about 25 years ago.
Yeah, so. There you go. But I think, you know, what we saw Sunday, again, that was a direct response to some of the shenanigans in previous meetings with the Titans. And I like the Ravens from an emotional standpoint, you know, answering that a little bit. And, you know, if people don't like it, tough. The 2000 Ravens were hated everywhere outside of Baltimore. And you know what? Charm City didn't mind when
they still talk about the Broad Street Bullies up in Philadelphia. Your brother-in-law up there, Uncle Luke. Luke Jones here. He is Baltimore Luke and Luke at WNST.net. You know, I want to talk a little bit more about the other teams and how the tournament sets up on both sides, right? Like, mm-hmm. I'm looking to say, all right, would I go to Tampa and sit in the press box with a mask on to watch the Super Bowl because I wouldn't want to have the Ravens win a Super Bowl and not be there, right? I mean, given what I've done for a living. Which is one of the reasons I think I'm going to Buffalo on Saturday night, because I'm thinking, like, COVID, it'd be the only thing I'm scared of, and landing and just going to a press box and flying home. I'm not hanging out in Buffalo. As I said to my wife, I mean, it's not like you can go across the border anymore and just pull your passport out. So, you know, the best part of Buffalo was going to Toronto.
And the wings, right?
And the wings. You know, and, yeah, you know, the Bills Mafia, they'll be, you know, finding me out there in Lancaster somewhere. But, this is an interesting tournament now. We're down to 8 teams. I, you know, no real awesome, crazy surprises along the line. Although I think the Rams, where they are, certainly their defense. We talk about the Ravens back in 2000, the kind of defense that we play. The Rams are playing some defense right now that Rex Ryan's talking about over the weekend. But these 8 teams, I don't know where this lands. I mean, Vegas will tell you, it'll be the Chiefs and the Packers. They didn't even play this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, that's what the expectation should be at this point. They were the number one seed. They were the best teams in their respective conferences, but we know that the number one seed doesn't always get there. Look at the Ravens last January. So a very recent example, but you know, you look at these final 8 teams. First of all, I always love divisional round weekend. That's my favorite weekend, even though now we've got this, what, quote, super wild card weekend. There are a couple games that were duds. I was not entertained by the Washington-Tampa Bay game, you know, even with Heinicke doing what he did, which is a nice story. But again, it was a 7-9 terrible Washington football team.
The most entertaining thing that happened over the weekend in the NFC was the Nickelodeon broadcast, without question. You know, when they're sliming the end zones.
Yeah, it seemed like people had fun with that. So, I mean, good for them. You know, good for the NFL. We always talk about this a lot in terms of baseball usually, but all of these sports should be doing things to try to reach younger audiences. So, you know, it's not that you're going to put a game on Nickelodeon every single week, but when you have some opportunities to branch out and expand and get some different eyeballs on your product, then great. You know, that's a good thing to see. But as it relates to the 8 teams that are left, you know, you already mentioned the Rams. I mean, clearly their quarterback situation is going to be a question mark with Jared Goff with the thumb. And, you know, you would assume he's ready to go after he was thrown in there after the injury. But you know, going to Green Bay, going to Lambeau, that's going to be a tall order, even for a really tough Rams defense. On the other side of that NFC bracket, Tampa Bay, who is a tough team to figure out. I mean, at times they look great, and other times they've looked terrible this year. And I don't need to tell you what happened to them in previous meetings against the Saints this year. So for them to go to New Orleans, you know, we'll see. But at the same time, over the course of Sunday's game with the Saints, I mean, you know, you look at the final score. I can't say I was terribly impressed by the Saints for a good portion of that game against the Bears. So, you know, the Packers are the favorite there. I think the Packers are the best team there. If you're asking me to pick someone, yeah, I'm going to pick Green Bay. But you know, that Tampa Bay New Orleans game, whoever gets out of that could be interesting there. And don't discredit the Rams defense, though. You know, we've talked about Ravens Bills, Buffalo, every bit as hot, if not hotter than the Ravens down the stretch. So as I mentioned, as much as people might be thinking in the back of their minds, putting off a potential trip to Kansas City, there's certainly nothing guaranteed about going to Buffalo. And Vegas has shown that with the Bills being a 3 or 3.5 point favorite, depending on which sports book you look at. And then, you know, I mean, the Browns are the Cinderella team at this point, right? I mean, even if you weren't all that impressed with the Rams and you were surprised that the Rams went to Seattle and handled Russell Wilson and the Seahawks, but I mean, it's the Browns and they're in the divisional round. I mean, that's just something we haven't seen in 25 years. You know, you have to go back to Bill Belichick winning a playoff game with the Browns back in what, 94, I guess it was. So
I remember where I was that day, dude.
Yeah. I mean, I remember the Browns beat the Patriots the year before or the week before. And that was Drew Bledsoe was kind of, you know, he was on the come at that point. And everyone's like, oh, this kid's a star. And, you know, they made the Super Bowl a couple years later with Parcells as head coach. But there were a lot of people who thought the Patriots were going to kind of be a sleeper team that could make some noise. And well, the Browns handled them in 94. So, but it's
my
wild.
Cousin got married that day on Long Island. So I was sitting in a Holiday Inn watching that, not realizing like Derek Alexander and Michael Jackson.
We're going to be Ravens in a couple
years.
We're
about to be about to join us. So
go figure. No one would have thought that. I mean, especially considering Art Modell and the tradition there. But on the flip side of that, you have a Kansas City team that is certainly well-rested and coming off the bye week, and Patrick Mahomes sat in week 17 in the same way that Lamar Jackson sat in week 17 last year. And I will say this now, Kansas City went 14-2. That is a great achievement, an understood level of greatness, but in the midst of what was their 7-game winning streak before they lost in week 17 in a game that didn't matter to them. Go back and look at those scores. One score wins in 7 straight weeks. And a couple of those games, if you actually watched them, they got out the big leads and then it kind of just messed around and they kind of coasted and cruised. And you know, they allowed a team to score 10 points in the last 5 minutes to make a game look interesting on the scoreboard. But you know, you always wonder though about, you know, we talked about this a lot with the Ravens last year. I agree with the way that Andy Reid approached it in week 17, but there is always that question of you shut things down for a couple weeks. Do you get the engine back started quickly enough? And certainly with the way the Browns jumped on the Steelers on Sunday night, I mean, just incredible. I mean, you know, that bad snap on the first play reminded you of the Broncos Seahawks Super Bowl, 7 years ago at this point. So, you know, certainly Kansas City needs to start fast because the Browns showed at the very least they have an ability to jump on you, and you know, have to give Cleveland credit, especially without their head coach being on the sideline and some really key players for them, including a couple members of their offensive line not being out there. So Kansas City, I expect them to win. I expect the Chiefs to win. I expect the Chiefs to be hosting either the Bills or the Ravens next week. But it's a Browns team that is feeling themselves.
Just get the Rofo gas up your car. Once the Browns go out there and do the good work, you know what I mean? That game will be right here in Baltimore. And next thing you know, you and I'll be fighting over who gets to sit in the press box for the AFC championship game. And I'll get some points back that I'll use for Tampa. You know?
Wouldn't it be something though, when you think about how last year, when the Ravens were hosting the Titans, all anyone was talking about was with a win, it was going to be Baltimore hosting the AFC championship for what? The first time in 50 years, I guess it was. or 49-50, whatever it was. And they lose, heartbroken, most shocking loss in team history, most disappointing, devastating, however you want to describe it. I mean, it's a game that no one expected them to lose, and they lost after the greatest regular season in team history. How ironic would it be if the following year, after everything that happened, 1-4 after the bye week, COVID outbreak, they have that just epic game of the year encounter with Cleveland. And then several weeks later, they're hosting the Cleveland Browns in the AFC Championship in Baltimore, the 5 versus 6 seed. I mean, you can't think stranger things have happened, but not too many. So that would be quite a story, but at the same
time, see the look on that man's face. You see the smile there. You see what that represents.
At the same time, I'm not holding my breath on the expectation that the Browns are going to beat the Chiefs. But as I mentioned, if there's such a thing as a vulnerable 14-2 team, the Chiefs kind of look like it in December. If you kind of looked at their...
Well, they're fat and happy. They went down the road last year. We'll see how bad they won it this week.
Well, and that's the thing. I mean, they won the Super Bowl last year, and we haven't seen a repeat. You know, that's something that we haven't seen a whole lot of. We've seen teams get back to a Super Bowl, and certainly New England in very recent history. But, you know, winning back-to-back, that's tough to do. And we've seen that bear out here over the last two decades, you know, going back to, you know, post-Denver Broncos John Elway years. So it's something that you just don't see a whole lot. And Cleveland's flying high and as confident as the expansion era Browns have ever been, and rightfully so. And you have a Kansas City team coming off the bye week and, you know, resting and comfortable and happy with how their regular season went. And we'll see if they come out firing, or do they come out looking like the Ravens did last January. And maybe we are talking, assuming the Ravens can beat the Bills, a Ravens Browns AFC championship, which would just be crazy.
Ice up. Luke Jones is here. The potential and the possibilities are limitless. It is Festivus for the rest of us. Luke will be monitoring all things happening at Owings Mills this week. If there's any breaking news, you will get it first on the WNSD Tech Service. Now the Baltimore Positive Tech Service, all brought to you by our friends at Coons Ford of Security Boulevard. Dennis will be here on Thursday. Bruce was around on Monday morning and Monday afternoon. We're getting it done here this week, heading off to Buffalo on Saturday night for some playoff football. Buffalo, January, Saturday night. We are WNST.net, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking Baltimore Positive.